Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Wrap. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by John Endres. Today we're going to be talking about the outcome of the ANC's most recent National Executive Committee meeting, the NEC meeting. We're also going to be talking about growing drama in the politics of the Johannesburg Council. Lastly, we're going to be talking about a bill to ban particular impeached individuals from holding parliamentary seats. Let's start off by talking about the ANC's National Executive Committee meeting. Now, we did talk about it on Monday, where we said that the party had had some logistical problems, which pointed to a sort of larger organizational collapse. But I just want to start off talking about the sort of substance of what was discussed at that ANC meeting with this clip from Fikile Mbalula. Now, just note there's a little bit of a problem with the video file, so the video is not synced up with the audio, but I'm sure it will give you an idea of what he said. So take a listen to Fikile Mbalula saying the following.
During the period of struggle, it will happen even now. Possible. If it means we're going to suffer through sanctions as leaders of the ANC, let it be. We'll never beg imperialists to subvert our democracy, to subvert our sovereignty. It happened during the period of struggle. It will happen even now. We will never forsake our country, which we fought for its liberation. And we're still marching on even now.
This was during Fikile Mbalula's report back on the contents of that National Executive Committee meeting to the media. He also, at the end, ends off with a sort of attack on anyone saying that the ANC should abandon policies like BEE or expropriation without compensation, saying we are not the DA. They don't believe in redress. They don't believe in transformation. These are core principles to us, essentially. We also have the published on Politics Web, the closing statement to the National Executive Committee from President Cyril Ramaphosa. And to summarize this, because it's quite long, a lot of it is filled with, we must have a good thing and we must also have another good thing. It's saying we must have alignment across centers of state power to create trade and industry and competition. We must ensure that integrated resource plan advances energy security and emission reduction while at the same time reducing the cost of electricity to the economy. So in other words, we must have government without trade-offs. We must focus on labor-intensive sectors such as agriculture, manufacturing, and construction, but we also need to be forward-looking and rapidly develop battery storage and electricity vehicle production. The key sort of point of this, of his closing statement, was he said that is the National Executive Committee's view that the tactic of the government of national unity has enabled the ANC to continue to execute its agenda for nation-building and fundamental socio-economic transformation of South Africa, albeit under conditions imposed on us by the strategic electoral setback that we suffered last year. Both the strategic policy priorities and budget point to the direction that we should support. In our assessment, we conclude that the decision to establish the government of national unity was correct. So I've gone through a lot there, John, but it seems very much like the ANC has decided that under all of this pressure, it's going to dig its heels in as deep as they can go.
Yeah, I think in a way, Nicholas, you might have just found the political slogan for the party, which we are going to start immediately after this podcast, which is government without trade-offs. I think that's a great idea. All government decisions should be, just absolutely free of any constraints, and trade-offs should just be ignored. Of course, that's not possible. And last time we spoke on this show, I think we spoke about the ANC losing touch with reality. And we're seeing more of that going on right now. So President Ramaphosa's statement is remarkable for its rambling nature, much in the way of a wish list. You know, we want to have this thing and the other thing, as you point out, without taking trade-offs into account, without mentioning at all the path that has brought us to where we are now, which is exactly the things that the ANC wants to persist traveling down. So it's really quite an amazing thing. This party is adrift at sea. It doesn't seem to know what it should be doing, so it clings to the barrel of old ideas and it bobs along the ocean and hopes that, some passing ship, maybe a friendly US president will pick it up and give it some better results. But that's not going to happen. They need to wake up to the situation they find themselves in.
It reminds us reminds me of a point that our former colleague Franz Cronier made about the ANC, about they produced thousands and thousands of pages of industrial development plans every single year since Ibrahim Patel took over that ministry, which he ran for like a decade. And every year the economy kind of did worse. The more pages they produced, the worse it did. And it seems like, once again, the response is, no, we must produce more pages and more plans and more industrial schemes. So, John, the sort of, I guess if one wanted to be charitable to the ANC, which is a difficult thing to do at the moment, one could say, well, look, this statement doesn't really reveal what the innermost workings of those in power actually think. Because this is about Ramaphosa trying to maintain control of the ANC. This is about the National Executive Committee saying, of course, what it always says, which is some communist gobbledygook, and that really, actually, there is a realization within the high levels of the ANC that they need to do something different, and they're just trying to work out how to break it to their own party. What do you make of that argument?
Yeah, so I do think that the sense of being under pressure and recognizing that there is a problem is finally breaking through. I think for a long time the ANC has sort of been pretending that everything was fine, but it's not. It's like the meme of that dog sitting in the fire saying this is fine. I think the ANC has now realized that everything is not fine. We see that the president also said our economy finds itself in a state of emergency, finally acknowledging that. But they definitely do not seem to have a solution to that. I think they are clinging to things that are comfortable, old ideological ideas, and very much also this notion of centralization. So that is sort of a thread that runs through the entire statement of President Ramaphosa's, is that the way to fix problems in the economy and in society is to do more intervention, more plans, more commissions, more agencies, more government activity, and to imagine that that is going to fix the problem. And from our perspective, we are very much in a situation where a government that does less would be probably better for the country than a government that tries to do too much and does so badly. And so that would be one recommendation of ours to the president is, sir, do less, and it will be better for the country.
Right, you can't have a huge patronage network where politically appointed cadres who are appointed on the basis of political connections or race or gender, whatever other criteria the ANC likes to add to disrupt meritorious appointments. You can't have a civil service that's based on that sort of principle where everyone is, to use the phrase, taking their turn to eat, and then also expect that same state to facilitate absolutely everything with the highest level of competence and efficiency and produce, all this marvelous economic growth and infrastructure and all of that. It's a policy that's fundamentally at odds with itself. It undermines that each half undermines sort of the other. You can't have your cake and eat it too. And that's very much the theme of this, of Cyril's the sort of speech here. It's just, we're going to have our cake and we're going to eat it too. But, there's precious little evidence that that's actually happening. Well, this does, I think, the feeling of things going wrong that we've been talking about for the ANC, I think, is causing ructions and vibrations throughout the political system. And I think you can see that in Johannesburg. We've recently seen Action SA and the ANC, who had a brief alliance in Johannesburg. That relationship has fallen apart. And now it looks like some of the ANC's other minority allies in the Joburg City Council are wanting a bigger share of the pie in order to stay on board. So led by El Jamaha and its councillors Tapelo Ahmad and Kabelo Gomanda, former mayors of Joburg, appointed by the same ANC-EFF coalition, some of the smaller parties in Johannesburg say that they are very unhappy that they have not been given the MMC of finance position, which was previously held by Councillor Margaret Arnold from the AIC. She was made Speaker of the Joburg Council, leaving that seat on the Mayor's Committee open. And the ANC looks set to add one of its own members into that position. And these smaller parties say, no, this instead should go to Tapelo Ahmad, a guy who was removed by that same coalition, kind of basically for talking crazy things about the city's finances and referring to loans that the council hadn't agreed to. So a completely outrageous demand, as far as I'm concerned, from these smaller parties. But I think this does suggest that there's a bit of nervousness about being tied so closely to the ANC in even some of its smallest allies. What do you make of this, John?
I think that there's a combination of stories at the moment, Nick, that indicate that the ANC's political rivals are smelling its weakness and are sort of closing in on it and seeing what bits of it they can rip out, or, you know, what bits they can get. So a very dangerous moment for the ANC, which is more and more looking weak and unable to keep control. And that is being sensed by the political actors in the space. They can see that this is happening, and they are seeking opportunities that arise from that state of affairs. But I think also that the clip you rolled at the beginning of the Secretary General, you know, demonstrating great defiance and bravado in the face of an external threat is reflective of the same thing. It is a way to signal strength from a state of weakness, and saying that really, you know, we may be looking weak, but we're actually very strong. We're very determined. Nobody's going to push us around. Whereas, as a matter of fact, the denials are what prove the strength of the case. Another incidental note is that the Secretary General was sounding quite a lot like those late apartheid ministers who would, you know, say, we will not bow down to sanctions. We will not tolerate interference in our own sovereign affairs, and wagging that index fingers around. It feels a lot like that. Definitely these shows of strength, I think, are signs of weakness.
Indeed. You know, it's like that classic sort of psychological thing that people who are often extremely insecure sort of overcompensate by being very brash and over the top and boastful. And I think that may be exactly what's sort of organizationally happening here. I also think that this is because, as I said at the beginning of the year, I thought that the Joburg municipal crisis was going to be one of the big stories of the year. And I think that crisis truly is cementing itself as one of the key parts of the election narrative going into 2026. Joburg is going to be the big battlefield in the next municipal government elections, which will either be next year or the very beginning of 2027. We're not quite sure. What do you make of the ANC's chances in Joburg? They're going to be facing off two threats. It looks increasingly like the DA will put up Helen Ziller in the Joburg Council there, which will be a formidable opponent. But at the other side, they're also going to be being attacked by MK, who did relatively well actually in Johannesburg in the last local government election. What's your take on how things are looking at the moment?
So as a Johannesburg resident, we're seeing signs of activity from the municipality, which we haven't seen for years and years and years. But there's road markings being done, there's curbs being scuffled, there's robots being repaired, there's street lights being repaired, which is shocking.
I believe Le Soufis explicitly said that was for the G20 summit, though.
It may be, but it may also be with an eye to, you know, the local government elections and saying we'd better do something. But my sense is that currently Joburgers are still skeptical about this. They're not really buying this as a true change of heart on the part of the ANC and a commitment to proper governance. I think that the anger is quite considerable. I think the disillusionment, the disgruntlement with the ANC is very, very deep. And I don't think they'll be able to turn it around before the local government elections. I also think that a Zilla candidacy is going to be like a really big factor in driving sentiment further away from the ANC, because Joburgers are, you know, a little bit rough, but we like to see stuff getting done. We like to see results. I think we don't mind that much who does it. We just want it to be done. And that is certainly a message I think that comes across with Helen Ziller, the toughness, the producing results, and that it's going to be hard for the ANC to counter that.
Yeah, I also think that, you know, for a lot of people go to Joburg because it really represents an economic future, economic opportunities, hope. You know, it's literally, you know, its name is in Zulu is the city of gold, Goli. So when you come, you know, when you move from rural Mpumalanga or the rural Eastern Cape or wherever, and you go to Joburg looking for work, and firstly, you don't find it because, you know, there aren't that many jobs out there. And secondly, everything just kind of seems sort of indistinguishably run from how things were back in whatever defunct rural municipality you were living in previously. You think, well, this isn't the promised land. And I think that too also is going to have a powerful psychological impact. Is it really, it's going to be very difficult for the ANC to go out to some of the people it's relied on traditionally, go vote for it and say, come on, guys, come out to the polls. This time it'll be different. You know, I think it's, you know, some of those, even those ANC supporters who have been, you know, quite loyal and are still kind of warm towards the party are going to be difficult to get out to the polls. The ANC traditionally does struggle in municipal elections to get its supporters out. And I suspect the problem may even be bigger this time.
Yeah, I think it's also because of the signs of internal dysfunction we're seeing, like the NEC meeting, for example. You know, if you can't book a hotel for your most important people in your party and make sure that they're fed and warm, well, you're gonna struggle to get the activists out. So yeah, I think
yes,
they're in trouble.
And if you're complaining about being given the cheap sodas when you are the leader of a liberation movement, but anyway. Last topic for today, kind of an interesting one, a little bit different from the previous stories we've talked about. The DA's Glynis Breytenbach has proposed a law, she's an MP from the DA, that would prevent judges and Chapter 9 institution heads who have been impeached from being able to become members of Parliament and serve in Parliament. Now, in the abstract, I really think this is very solid. In other countries which have impeachment, I mean, I'm thinking United States off the top of my head, but I think also other countries that have sanctions like this. Being impeached from an institution usually has pretty severe consequences for you. You don't just get fired from your job. You then are often banned from holding any government position at any level following that impeachment. One thing, though, that I just sort of on principle makes me feel a little bit uneasy is, of course, this is very obviously targeted at two specific MPs, those being Busisiwe Mkhwebane and John Hlophe, both from the MK party. EFF. EFF is where Mkhwebane ended up. Sorry, I forgot, because she's also got ties to MKP. But anyway, the point being, though, that, you know, I always feel a little bit uncomfortable when laws are sort of written with specific people in mind. But overall, I think it's a good idea. What's your take on this? Am I just being, you know, an irritating sort of theoretical principle liberal, or is this sensible? What do you make of it?
Yeah, I sort of share your misgivings. And you know, sometimes when a law is passed for a specific person, the law gets the name of that person. So this would be the Lex Mkhwebane or the Lex Hlophe. But I do think that the principle that is at stake here is solid enough that it allows us to overcome our misgivings. And the principle here is that if you hold a really important position in the state, like a judge, for example, or public protector, then you should be a person of unimpeachable integrity. And I think, you know, that's you hold an exalted position. You are deserving of high respect. You enjoy legal protections. Now, you get a lot of privileges as a result of this position, because a lot of the responsibility of running a good society rests on your shoulders. And if you let the team down to such an extent that you'd get impeached, then I think it is appropriate to say you're not going to get another chance, because you've shown yourself to be a person lacking in integrity, and therefore you should play no role in making laws for society that bind others. So in this case, I think this Breytenbach initiative is a good one, should be supported, and I hope it passes.
Indeed, and you know, I also think that Parliament after the Constitution is sort of like one of the central pieces of our democratic system. And one of the big problems I think we have in South Africa is that a lot of people just don't have a lot of respect for Parliament. They don't take it seriously. All sorts of nefarious characters end up in Parliament. And this should be a body which holds people to certain standards. You can't go into Parliament unless you've had, if you've had a criminal conviction in the last 5 years, I think, after your sentence has been served. I think even that's too lenient. I think if you've had a serious criminal conviction against yourself, you shouldn't be able to go to Parliament at all. But you know, at least we do have a sanction for that. So, you know, if you are, as you say, if you're removed from one of these important high trust positions in society, then really you shouldn't serve at all. Anyway, thank you very much.
To make one point in closing, Nicholas, which is just the observation that we're seeing at the moment is the return of contestation to the political system, where many of our institutions were kind of moribund and weren't doing very much, were quite stagnant. And just to see like the challenges that are popping up all over the place in municipalities, in parliament, in various organs and lawmaking and so on, that's actually a very healthy sign. It's something to be welcomed. And I think that's going to continue playing out. We're going to see a lot of these kinds of fights emerging over the next few years.
Yeah, 100%, 100% correct. All right. That is all the time we have for today. We hope you found the show interesting, and we will be back tomorrow with the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a wonderful day.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.